Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on looking at economic reality when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. A Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax. And a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed at the rate of 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government does to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the guy in the pizza parlor make a 38% profit on that pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make, prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store where you sit to eat it? Why does government get paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about economic reality. It's a tough subject. I mentioned to you the other day when students come into class, oftentimes I will take a copy of the privateer and then run it off the copy machine and spread it around. We typically have five, six students here sitting in the class, and I'll pass it out to everybody. I'll say, here, take this home tonight and read it, see what you think about it. We'll talk a little about it tomorrow. And next day comes along, and I say, well, did everybody read their privateer last night? Did everybody read their international forecaster? Now, one of the problems with reading the whole thing in one evening is that the international forecaster is typically 30 pages. Sometimes it's 40. I've seen them as many as 44 pages. Comes out twice a week. Typically, it's around 20. So that's quite a bit to read in one sitting to start with. But most of them will say, well, I read 3 pages. That's about the average, 3 pages. And I say, 3 pages. Are you a slow reader? No. It was so depressing, I couldn't read more than 3 pages. And I want to tell you that the people that come here to law school are already pretty well informed. You know, they're not virgins in Hollywood. By the time you come to this law school, you already know about the Federal Reserve and about international geopolitics and communism and so on. It's not like you're talking to mainstream America and you're being asked, my God, you don't believe in the conspiracy theory, do you? I mean, hell, everybody that comes here is already a full-fledged conspiracy theorist. So we wouldn't be here. So when I'm looking at the people who are pretty well informed as to what's going on around us, you know, scripturally, most of these people are pretty well informed as to the Bible. Not all, by any stretch of imagination, but, you know, fair to middle and well. They've typically read the Bible once. And they're familiar with some Bible prophecies, and they're interested in geopolitics and so on, but they can only read 3 pages. I got to tell you, that's a shocker. Because if the news is so bad, if psychologically you're so tuned out that you cannot receive the information, then there isn't any hope for you to start with. I got to tell you. You know, picture this. You're on board the Titanic, and the ship has already hit the ice. Reality is here. Now, one guy comes up and says, go back to your stateroom. Everything's fine. The next guy says, oh, my God, I think we're going to sink. You don't know. I mean, you're not down in the bowels of the ship, you know, where the water's coming in. You don't got anything to go on here other than reports. But, you know, when somebody says this ship is unsinkable, you should be suspicious right off the bat. You know that? You know, when somebody comes along and tells me that this is a surefire investment and you can't go wrong, you know, right away I say to myself, oh, come on, wake up here. So, you know, with age comes wisdom. We like to think that we're a little smarter today. We're a little better able at 70. To be able to compute information than we were when we were 20 or 30, and we were a whole lot more idealistic. You know, I have students that come in here and they're in their 20s and 30s, and these poor people, I mean, I guess I was that way when I was a kid too. You know, we believe what we read in the papers. That's what Will Rogers said. You know, all I know is what I read in the papers, and we actually believe that that tribe. Well, as time progresses along, though, we find out that the newspaper and the television and the radios, they lie to us a lot. We're able, after the fact, you know, 10, 15 years goes by, 20 years goes by, and we find out about the lies the government was telling us 20 years ago. Which, you know, when you're a kid 18, 20 years old working for Barack Obama and change, you know, you haven't been around for 36 or 54 years that you can look back and see how the Carters and the Nixons and the and the Fords and so on were lying to us at the time and deceiving us, and so you're not nearly as suspicious. So by the time you get down to the newsletters, and here's where the rubber meets the road, these newsletters are really contrarian, really contrarian. And they're telling us numbers and telling us facts and telling us things that are so disconcerting, things that we don't want to hear. And I have to tell you that I don't want to hear it either. But you know, when you're standing on the deck of the Titanic, and then somebody says, we hit that iceberg back there, and there's a 300-foot hole down the side of the ship. Hey, it's time now to start thinking seriously about getting off. What do we need to do to get off this thing? Now, that's where we're at here, and I wrote down 20 items. I'm going to give you the list of 20 here. You won't be able to write them down as fast as I go through them, but you can pause the machine. You can put this on a CD. You can go back and you can put them down little by little. But there's 20 things that's going to sink this ship, 20 things that's going to sink the American economy, 20 things that's going to sink the world economy, whether we like it or not. The world's economy already has the 300-foot hole down the side of the ship. All we need to do now is to figure out what the hell do we do to save our own ass. That's the only thing left for you to consider. Now, if you think you got something more you want to consider, get after it. Don't let me get in your way, but I just want to tell you. Subprime real estate already collapsed, and what you're viewing today, if nothing else happened, would sink the ship. It's already holed. This thing's done. But that's not the only problem. We have the Alt-A real estate. The Alt-A is going to take down twice as much real estate as the subprime real estate, and maybe as much as three times as much, at least double, and maybe even three times. Then there's the balance of payments, the national debt, the national budget, and the national deficit, commercial real estate, Social Security, Medicare, unfunded government liabilities, total government liabilities, the credit card debt, the bond market, derivatives, unemployment, Europe in meltdown, Asia in meltdown, and in 1928 it was England that started the Great Depression, and the world economy only has $1 trillion to lend, period, end of report. Now, all you got to do is to put those 20 items down on the paper. Any one of those, oven by itself, would sink us. And we've got all 20 working against us simultaneously. That's why, on the Privateer, he made these four statements on page 5. Now, listen to this. He said, this is genuine depression territory. The United States is literally week by week living on borrowed time. The alarm bells are getting loud, and there is an epic-making U.S. financial debacle ahead of us. All right. Now, that's the bad news. And sometimes people, you know, write me letters, and they say, you know, you're a real downer. No, I'm a real realist. And this is where the world is today. I didn't make it this way. I'm just here reporting to you. This is the way it already is. And I'm not going to change that. I'm not the Secretary of the Treasury. And I'm not going to bail us out of this depression. And I'm here to tell you that Tim Gaither isn't going to do it either. Now, Tim Gaither is going to be there along with Goldman Sachs and all of the Illuminati, and they're going to rape, rob, and pillage what's left. When they get off the ship in their own lifeboat, they have already taken all the stuff out of the safe. They've got all of their valuables. They've got everything that they want in their lifeboat, and they're getting off. I just wanted to alert the rest of you. Did you know that these Illuminists over here are getting off the ship? Did you know that they're taking everything out of the safes and everything that they can get into their own lifeboat, and they're leaving by themselves? They believe the ship is going to sink. Now, they're not telling you that. They're telling you, go back to your stateroom, everything's going to be fine, while they are looting the ship's wealth and putting it in the lifeboat and making preparations for getting the hell out of here. And so I'm just here on the deck telling the rest of you, hey, listen, if these guys are leaving the ship, then it's time for us to leave the ship. Some of the stories that come out are like this. You know, some of these guys at the big brokerage houses, you know, like Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns, you see, they knew those companies were going down, and they were going upside down, and so they cashed in their stocks. While they were touting and telling you to buy more stock in Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs and Lehman Brothers, they were selling theirs. At the very same time, if you'll remember here a few years back, you know, when the big scandals were coming around and all these big corporations were going upside down, and then we found out after the fact that the top management in those companies were selling their stock, like Enron stock, the big muckety-mucks, you know, were selling their stock at the same time they were telling you to buy it. Hey, those guys knew what was coming down, and they knew it was coming down ahead of time. And then us little guys out here got burned, didn't we? All right. So that's what I thought I would remind you of. And there's two publications here, actually three. I'm going to give you a third publication. It's called The Money Changer. The Money Changer. And this guy, Franklin Sanders, puts out a newsletter. And I subscribe to these three, or I receive these three. And there's a lot more. If you're getting some other newsletter, don't cancel your subscription to somebody else's newsletter. They're all about the same. They're all downers. They're all telling you the same numbers in general, like the McIlvaney Report or Gary North's Remnant Review and so on. I'm not here to tell you that they're bad or that they're not good. They are. They're really good. And if you're getting them, a lot of times people come, hey, I get Gary North's paper. Good, stick with it. He's telling you the skinny. But I don't subscribe to all of them. I've got enough money to get them all. But I get three. And the Money Changer is one of them. And I like old Franklin Sanders. We kind of disagree on a few things. But, you know, by and large, the guy's got his head on straight. And he's giving you the straight poop here. And he interviews a lot of people that are in the inner sanctum. And those interviews are always good because they tell you, you know, here's what's coming down. Here's what's going on. All right, so let me give you these names and numbers again. You can just go to the webpage. You know, you can get the Money Changer. Just plug it into a Google search, and I'll tell you. The Privateer, I can give you this one. It's right in front of me here. It's called www.the-privateer.com. And the other over here is called theinternationalforecaster.com. It's easy. And just the, if you can spell all of that, it's called theinternationalforecaster.com. And why don't you go to those three, and if you can do it, swing it, get one. And I take the Privateer, number one. And then number two, I would put down the International Forecaster. And then number three, Franklin Sanders Money Changer. And I don't know how many newsletters are out there, but those are the top three. And then I put them in that order. And don't like to disappoint anybody over here for any reason. I just wanted to tell you that that's the way I see it. Now, let me take a look here at Social Security. Social Security will bring the economy down all by itself. If everything else was just run along honky-dory and none of this meltdown had occurred, Social Security was going to do it. It would take a little longer. Social Security will be out of money again in 2012. And it will have a $4 trillion deficit by 2032, I believe was the last number I saw, $4 trillion. 38 million Americans get their Social Security checks every month, and without those checks, it's going to make such an impact on the economy. When Social Security goes upside down, that oven by itself, it would take the economy down. See, this economy, oven by itself, is pretty fragile. It's like a juggler trying to keep three balls in the air, and then four, and then five, and then six, and then eight, and then ten. You know, there comes a point in time when how many of these balls can you keep in the air all at the same time? And there's going to be a limit there. All right, so we're reaching that limit. Social Security would do it by itself. Medicare will do it by itself. And we've got both the Social Security and Medicare problems. President Bush said, let's take on Social Security. Now, you could sit there and say, yeah, but we don't like the Bush plan. Well, okay, I don't care. There's no skin off my back one way or the other. But whether it's Barack Obama or George Bush or, you know, Joe Sixpack, somebody has to take on the Social Security program, and they've got to solve the Social Security deficit problem. And it's insoluble because it's a Ponzi scheme, and it grows by geometric progression. It grows 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and you can't do that indefinitely. You can add to it arithmetically, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but you can't go 1, 2, 4, 8. 16. And so it's growing geometrically, and it doubles every so often. And as it doubles, then the next doubling and the next doubling takes it into the realm of it's not sustainable. Social Security is a Ponzi scheme that is no longer sustainable. Medicare, you've got the same problem. Medicare. And either one, and you've got both, are going to take down the system. Not this year, not next year, but it's coming, and it wouldn't make any difference whether we've got these other 20 problems or not. If you can't solve the Social Security problem and the Medicare problem, then it's going to take the economy down. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, since they're both insoluble, then the solution is abolish both. You abolish them. There isn't anybody out there that's got the political will to abolish Social Security. Wake up. There's nobody out there that's going to take on Medicare and tell you let's abolish it. Now, as old as I am, I guess if I went down signed up, I could probably get Social Security payments. I probably could go down and get Medicare. In fact, I was chastised the other day. The wife broke her leg, took her into the clinic to get a cast put on it, and they wanted to know, well, what's your Medicare number? And we said, we don't have Medicare. And they looked at us like, why you've got to be an illegal alien to be in the United States without Medicare, as old as you people are. And so, you know, when you tell people, look, because of my political, religious, and ideological beliefs, we don't believe in Social Security and Medicare and government bailouts and government largesse here. You know, we support ourselves. That's a wild new idea, you know, support yourself. But I just want to throw that one out there for you. And so people look at you like, you know, there's something wrong with you. And maybe there is. I wouldn't deny it, but I'm just sitting here telling you we don't want it. We don't want it because it's unsustainable. And it's like having air conditioning. You know, I don't have air conditioning in my house. I've got some air conditioning units in rooms, but I don't have air conditioning in my house. And you need to get used to the fact that when the electricity goes off, none of us are going to have air conditioning. So you must well get used to the idea that before there was arid, extra dry, and air conditioning, there was sweat. Sweat. S-W-E-A-T. Sweat. All right. Now, we have unfunded government liabilities. That's number eight. Do you know how much that is? Unfunded government liabilities total $65 trillion. Then you got another $34 trillion of total government liabilities, which totals, the last time I saw a number, $99 trillion. Hey, kids, oven by themselves, that'll take the economy down. $100 trillion for your government to fund isn't sustainable. Now, when you add to that all the total debt in America, it's $150 trillion. It's kind of an estimate, you know, 150. Do you know how many derivatives are out there? 1,000 trillion. 1,000 trillion. That's called a quadrillion. Boys and girls, we're getting into numbers here that only hyperinflation, you know, in Germany of 1923 can comprehend or put down on paper. I mean, we got numbers out here with so many zeros behind them, you know, 15 zeros, 18 zeros behind them. All right, just so that you know, you got $99 trillion worth of government liabilities total. 65 are unfunded. 34 are funded. You're making $14 trillion a year. It's contracting, you know, at the rate of 22%. Remember I reported that to you the other day? Your economy is contracting at 22% per annum as I speak. Now, any of these numbers here, of and by themselves, are going to sink the ship. And as I pointed out, I said, we got 20 of these numbers. 20. So the next time somebody says, well, this is a short-lived recession, everything's going to be all right by the end of 2009 or surely by 2010, you people are dreaming again. And to put it here in the words of Buckler, he calls it U.S. fiscal fantasy land. We're living in this fantasy. Let's draw another one here. Your total government liabilities, $99 trillion. Now take a look at your credit card debt. Americans have enough credit card debt out here that they're of and by themselves going to take the economy down. And that's because it's unserviceable. You can't service the debt. And that's because the interest rate is so high. The interest rate. Now, I saw some interest rates here. They tease you in here with 7%, and then it goes up from there. 29% is pretty common now. 18% is where it's historically been, 18%. When you've got an interest rate of 18%, it doubles under a rule here. It's called the rule of 72. So if you take your interest rate over here, and I kind of forget how this rule of 72 works now off the top of my head, but you take that interest rate and you divide it, I believe, into 72. Is that the way that works? Try it. 72 divided by 18 is 4. I'm pretty sure that's the way that works. That means every 4 years, the debt doubles. And so let's suppose you got a $10,000 debt, and you're paying that debt off at the rate of 2% per month, and you've got an 18%, you got an 18% interest rate over here. You can never retire that debt. The debt isn't going to retire itself, and that's because the interest on the debt is accumulating faster than you're paying it off. And then the debt doubles every 4 years. So in 4 years, you won't owe $10,000, you'll owe $20,000. And while you're trying to service that $20,000 debt at 18% interest, paying it off at 2% a month, the debt doubles in 4 years to $40,000, and it doubles to $80,000, and so on up the line. So it's unserviceable. That's what that boils down to. And as a result of that, of and by itself, it will take the economy down. This fiat paper money over here, without land Sabbaths and jubilees, without practicing these 18 financial laws of the scripture, the ultimate end of it is that the thing collapses under its own weight. All Ponzi schemes do that. Bernie Madoff, you know, he just made off with $65 billion, the last number I saw. And the investors were investing their paper profits into this paper Ponzi scheme and ended up with just exactly that, a pile of paper, promises, empty promises. Now, the reality of the Ten Commandment model is that we collect in pinto beans. We actually collect in wheat, corn, beans, onion, oil, as opposed to paper, which is a claim upon wheat, corn, beans, onion, oil in somebody else's warehouse. This is called property. Now, if you'll concentrate on property and get off this fiat paper, you know there might be some hope for you. Now, instead of calling me Chicken Little and the sky's falling down, hey, listen, I'm giving you the straight skinny over here. I'm telling you that the subprime real estate, Alt-A real estate, balance of payments, national debt, national budget, national deficit, commercial real estate, Social Security, Medicare, unfunded government liabilities, the total government liabilities, and the credit card debt, along with the bond market and unemployment of and by themselves, will take the economy down. One item alone, and you've got 13 right there working against you. All right? Now, let's take a look at another one. 98% of the dollar's value has already been lost. So all of this hoopla about the value of the dollar and saving the dollar and preserving the dollar's value and the strength of the dollar is a bunch of hoopla that's misplaced. And that's because 98% of it has already been lost between 1930 and today. The price of things, you know, just take a look at what the numbers tell you. And you've got 2% of the value of the dollar left. So all we're fighting over is the last 2%. So for practical purposes, the dollar is dead. Already, it's gone. Kaput. We don't need to be concerned about that. What we're talking about now is your standard of living. Are you going to have something to eat and a roof over your head over the next 5 years? That's what we're discussing here. So if you've got a 401k plan and you have $100,000 in your 401k, as hyperinflation takes over, your $100,000 at some point in time will probably buy you a basket of groceries, maybe. There's a story of a guy that bought a 20,000 mark life insurance policy in 1903. And the mark in 1903 was worth about 50 cents, so that's about a $10,000 policy in 1903. And when it matured in 1923, he bought one loaf of bread. This guy paid into it, you know, faithfully for 20 years. It was an endowment policy, bought one loaf of bread. That's what happens when the value of your dollars or the value of your euros or escudos deteriorates. Now, the dollar today is worth about 82 cents, you know, compared on the basket of currencies around the world's priced at 82. And the euro, last time I saw a number, was about $1.27 or 28. So the euro is worth, you know, something more, 25 cents more than the dollar is. Now, the dollar is losing value. As you print more dollars and put them into circulation, in relationship to the rest of the currencies in the world, it's worth less. The Canadian dollar is worth about, I think it's 82 cents compared to the American dollar. The American dollar was valued at 100. The Canadian dollar is down around 80 cents, something like that. The Australian dollar about the same, about 80 cents. See, so they, and an international forecaster, every publication, he puts out these numbers and says, okay, well, here's what the value of your money is worth, and here's where this value is headed. Well, the last 2 cents compared to 1930, so you always have to compare this with something. So you go back to 1930 when we had a dollar, which was measured in gold. And a $20 double eagle was measured at $20.67. And so the dollar was measured at about a dollar, you know, 100 cents. Now take a look at what that gold dollar from 1930 buys today, and it's down to 2 cents. Now you take that 2 cent dollar and you compare that with the Japanese yen and you compare it with the euro and so on, and they have these various and sundry ratios. And that's what boggles everybody's mind. It's simple enough to figure out, you know, with you just strip away all this hoopla. Bottom line is, the dollar is headed toward zero value. It will become valueless. So your $100,000 that you have in your 401k is going to buy nothing, zero, zilch. Furthermore, before it degenerates to zero, the government's going to nationalize it anyway and then put it into the Social Security program and use it to stave that thing off for a few more years. That's what they did in Brazil a few years back. That's what they're talking about doing in Congress today. That's what they're going to do. When the desperation gets to the point where we have to take action, that's what they're going to do. There's $35 trillion out there in these 401ks, and the government's going to come in here and nationalize it. How do I know that? Because that's what governments always do. They've done it in the past. They've done it recently. And there isn't any reason to believe the United States of America, when their backs are to the wall and there's desperate straits that we have to get through, they're going to do the same thing. So just wake up and smell the coffee. Kiss your 401k goodbye. And with that, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about taking a good hard look at the economic realities. I mentioned to you earlier, most people can read about 3 pages, and then it boggles their minds. Now, I'm presuming that with a little practice and a little experience, you can read the whole newsletter, and if you can get something from it. I do. I read them every issue. I take and sit down. Sometimes it takes me a couple, 3 days, but I'll go through it, and I'll get the whole gist of it so that I can keep myself abreast of what the hell's going on and what the timeline is. About how much time do we have left? Now, nearly everybody's agreed that this is a long, slow process. So let me give you some timelines here. So you're wondering, you know, do I have 1 year, 6 months, 3 weeks? Notice here that the U.S. is literally week by week living on borrowed time. That's true. The axe is going to fall here one of these days, and we don't know when, and we don't know exactly how severe it's going to be. But so far, we're up to number 13 here, and we can see that it's going to happen at some point in time. So put this down. Nearly everybody is picturing about 36 months. Some think it's going to happen right away. Some think it's going to happen in 3 or 4 or 5 years. About 36 months that this thing isn't going to be flying anymore. I personally will be surprised if it lasts for 36 more months, but then, you know, the longer it drags out, you know, the more time you have available to you. For instance, let's suppose that you don't have any pinto beans in stock. You've heard me in the past say, I think you should have a 4-year supply of food on hand. Why do I say 4 years? Well, because the Great Tribulation is 1,260 days, 1,290 days, 1,335 days. Those three numbers are bandied about in the book of Revelation. That's about 3.5 years. Give yourself a little time going in, a little time coming out. That looks like about 4 years minimum. Then you also ought to have some seeds available so you can grow something in your backyard. Most of you people out there depend upon just-in-time delivery. You shop 2 or 3 times a week down at Walmart, and that's nice. That's real convenient. As long as you've got gasoline, as long as you've got a car, and as long as you've got a house and a refrigerator, and Walmart is there, and they got pinto beans on the shelves, that's fine. But now, one of these days, all of that is going to be swept away. It is always swept away when there's an economic collapse. It happens. Now, how long is that going to drag on? Well, that kind of depends. In the last depression from 1929 to 33, it took 3.5 years to reach bottom. And then we drug along on the bottom until 1941. December 7th, 1941 changed everything. World War II put everybody back to work. The depression was over and everybody's working again. How long is this one going to last? Well, all of the numbers indicate to us that this is going to be worse. Therefore, we would project it'll probably last longer than 11 years. It'll be worse and last longer. Well, if it isn't as bad as, and it's only half as long, it's going to last 5 years, and it won't be as bad as the last depression, it'll only be half as bad. That's not good for anybody, and you ought to be prepared then for the next 5 years, shouldn't you? People are calling me all the time on the telephone, and they're saying, well, Mr. Gordon, I got to take action. I want to do it, and I want to do it right now. Most of these people are looking for a new master. And here at the law school, we're not training subordinates to follow George Gordon. This is not the Gordon cult. We're not running church here. We're not playing church. We're not trying to get you to join us. Join in some common endeavor. This is a school. We just sell and teach information. What you do with the information, how you use it, that's between you and God and the gatepost. That doesn't have anything to do with me. I can't save you people out there. I get the impression a lot of times from emails and calls when people call me that, yes, the government's let me down, but Mr. Gordon, you are going to save me and I'm going to follow you. Well, where in the hell did you intend to follow me? Well, where did you think we were going? Where did you think I was going to lead you? What do you think I'm going to do for you? What do you think an old man is going to do for you? Did you think I could save you? Now, with a little bit of foreknowledge and a little bit of forethought, there's a lot that you can do for yourself. There's not a whole lot that I can do for you. I'm not going to pay your mortgage off. I'm not going to loan you that $500,000 that you need to bail yourself out. And probably nobody else is going to lend you the money. So that means that you're going to go bankrupt. So after you go bankrupt, how much are you going to have left over? What are you going to have left to start over with? Now, I teach a business school here. Pretty down-to-earth, straightforward. Hey, this is where the bear desert, this is where the numbers are, business school. Now, in these depressions and recessions, like the last Great Depression, many, many people made fortunes. They made a lot of money. Let me relate this one story to you. A student comes in here one day, and he says, my grandfather started a salvage business back about 1930 when the Depression started. And by the end of the Depression, he was rich. He was in New Jersey. I don't know if he had $1 million. He didn't need $1 million in 1940. Hell, $100,000 in 1940 would be worth more than $1 million today. So this old man, at the time he's a young man, in 1930, goes out and he starts collecting aluminum cans and batteries and tin and you know, rags and scrap and one thing and another. And pretty soon he develops a business. This is right in the heart of the Depression. This is when normal business is not functioning well. Restaurants are closing their doors and going out of business, and this guy goes out and makes money. There's money to be made. There's business to be done, whether it's a depression or not. But now, if you're running a restaurant, then you're catering to upscale people. And these people are losing their jobs in one thing and another, like Starbucks selling $4 lattes, I don't think is a very good business. You know, we can all live without coffee. And I can sure as hell live a long time without a $4 cup of coffee. Now, when I've got money in my pocket, you know, and I'm trying to show you how vain I am, I can take you into Starbucks and buy you a $4 cup of coffee, especially if we're sitting here working out some kind of a business deal. But when I get down to where I've got to decide, do I eat tonight or not, I can sure as hell do without the $4 cup of coffee. And that tells me that since we're going into unemployment and a breakdown of Social Security and Medicare, breakdown of the dollar, we're going into uncharted waters over here, it says to me that Starbucks is probably not the best stock to be buying. So maybe if you've got Starbucks stocks, maybe you might want to be thinking about dumping the old mate onto somebody else, because that's what's going to happen. And if there's somebody else out there, it's called what we call the bigger fool theory, and he wants to buy Starbucks because he thinks the recession is about to come to an end and this is a good time to buy. Let's try buying houses. Right now, people are out snapping up a lot of these houses, 19 million homes on the market. About half of them, or maybe 60% of them, are foreclosures. And they're buying these houses. Houses that were selling for $500,000 are now selling for $3,000. And they're being snapped up because they're a bargain basement price. They're down $200,000. Hey, listen, I expect those $300,000 houses to drop by another 50%. They'll be selling for $150,000 next year. Now, a lot of people are out there spending their money right now, and they're going to lose their shirts. I don't think this is the time to be buying houses. I wouldn't tell you not to, but I'm not here telling you to buy them either. I was reading John Nadler the other day, and he said he thought the day will come when a one-ounce gold coin will buy one house. A one-ounce gold coin will buy one house. That's what his prognostications are. I don't know if it'll get that good or if it's going to get that bad. I guess it could. But the price of houses is still dropping. And if the price of houses is still dropping, can you tell me one good reason why we should spend our money on a house now that has decreased from 500 to 300 and is probably going to drop from 300 to 150? Why in the hell would we want to buy it now? Wouldn't we want to save our cash and come back into the marketplace and buy that house when it bottoms out at 150 or 100 or 50? I mean, I don't know where the bottom is, and I don't think anybody else does, but 300,000 isn't the bottom of the market yet. So why anybody would want to buy a house today? I can't think of a good business reason why. There might be some emotional reason. There might be some job-related reason or something like that, but I can't think of any legitimate business reason for doing it. It's not a good business time, not a good business buy. So I just thought I'd throw that one out to you. Think about that one for a while. Now, 98% of the dollar's value has already been lost, and so you need to be cash rich. I said you need to be, you know, in a cash position. Well, let's think about that for a minute. Do you think that you should sell your house? Let's suppose you could sell your house in the morning, and I got a student over here the other day, got an offer on a house, and he's going to take his money. He's going to get paid $10,000 or $20,000 or something when he walks away from here. He should put those in $100 bills and stick them under his mattress, because today they're worth 2 cents. Remember, they're worth 0.02 cents, and they're on their way to zero. Doesn't your common sense tell you that you wouldn't want to hold your cash position in the form of United States dollars? Well, then, should we hold our dollars or our cash position? Should we hold our cash position in Australian dollars or Canadian dollars or Swiss francs or Russian rubles or Chinese yuan or Japanese yen or? Huh? What do you think? Well, I'm an old-timey businessman, and I look around the world today, and I see all of the nations of the world using fiat currency, and everybody is inflating their currency, lowering their interest rates, trying to bail themselves out of this economic debacle, which has already enveloped us. And I say to myself, why would I want to hold my wealth in anything other than real property? Now, real property is the real deal, the real McCoy. It's wheat, corn, beans, honey, gold, silver, oil, copper. I mean, it's got to be in something. There's a second factor here. Would you like to hold your wealth in somebody else's warehouse, or would you like to hold your wealth in your own warehouse? Now, a lot of times people say to me, oh, my God, Mr. Gordon, I live in a condominium in downtown New York. Well, okay. Okay. Have you ever thought about leaving downtown New York? Have you ever thought about just packing up and walking the hell out of town? I know it's kind of a wild new idea, but during the peak of the bubonic plague in London, England, it got so bad there weren't enough people to pick up the bodies and dispose of them. And people just walked out. They just, with what they had on their backs, without packing or doing jack diddly squat, they just started walking west until they got the hell out of London. And when it gets that bad, I guess people will just start walking out of New York. Has it ever occurred to anybody to leave New York before you're reduced to absolute poverty? Before you are reduced to zero, has it ever occurred to you to leave with 5, 10, or 15 cents in your pocket? Just a wild new idea. Because when this thing hits, you know, these big cities, if history is any guide to the future, are going to become untenable. You saw it with 9/11. I mean, hell, they shut everything down. You had to walk out of lower Manhattan, didn't you? So what do you think is going to happen when the power grid goes down? Has anybody ever thought about that power grid going down? So what's going to happen when you've got all of this this chaos in the marketplace, and the trucks aren't running, and the food isn't being delivered to Walmart, and the gasoline isn't down there at the gas station? I mean, not just a shortage of gas. I mean, there's no gas at all. What if there's no gas for 30 days? What the hell are you people in Los Angeles going to do? Have you got that one scoped out? Have you got that planned? You know what you're going to do? Because that's what these newsletters are telling you to start thinking about. Now, look, the subprime real estate's already collapsed. Alt-A real estate is going to collapse. Commercial real estate is in the process of collapsing. Social Security is bankrupt. It's just, it isn't done yet. I mean, the checks are going out. I don't deny it. And the checks are going to continue to go out. But the question arises, what in the hell are you going to buy with this check when there's nothing on the shelf? You know, Donald Trump's got millions of dollars. What in the hell is he going to buy with his millions of dollars when there's nothing on the Walmart shelf, which is where you're headed, because steel production has been cut in half worldwide over the past year. So that tells us then that the steel companies are expecting to sell half as much steel. What does that tell you? The economy is going to contract by 50%. Now, if the economy contracts by 50%, aren't the people in the world still going to be eating? Aren't they still going to be driving their cars and buying gas? But we're going to be doing it on half as much. So your living standard is going to be cut by half. Donald Trump's probably won't. When prices double, he'll have twice as much money. It'll cost him twice as much money, but he's got it to spend. But little guys like us, we don't have twice as much money to spend now, do we? So when prices double and you don't have twice as much money to spend, then you're going to live half as well, aren't you? And that's assuming that you've still got the same amount of money. But if you lose your job, you're going to have less money. So prices double and you've got half as much money. Now, what's that do to you, Bob? Have you thought about that? Are you thinking about it? Because that's what the privateer and the international forecaster are alerting you to. Now, Europe is in the process of melting down also. In looking at the international forecaster, they took three countries, Latvia, Estonia, and Lithuania. Their economies are contracting faster than the United States. Now, remember, I reported this to you a couple nights ago. The U.S. economy is contracting at the rate of 22% per annum. That's unheard of. That is depression territory, 22% per year. Europe is contracting at 30% a year, 8 percentage points higher than ours. Europe, the European common market, you people there in Europe, you know, in France, in Belgium, in Luxembourg, you know, you're sitting there saying, well, it isn't that bad here in Belgium right now. Well, it's that bad in Estonia right now, and they're a part of your program. I mean, it's almost like saying, well, hell, that's out in California, and that doesn't affect us here in Missouri. Like hell it doesn't. California is 10% of the whole American economy. When those Californians out there catch cold, the rest of us are going to get pneumonia. Wake up and smell the coffee here. California is such an integral part of the economy of America that if the Californians said we're going to secede from the Union, we'd have to go out there and conquer them, dummies, to prevent it in our own self-interest. So you Californians, if you think we're going to let you secede from the Union, you got another guess coming. It ain't going to happen. Not that you people would want to anyway, but I'm just using that as an example. That happened here with the southern states, and they said, hey, we're going to opt out. Hell, the southern states produced 50% of the federal revenue for the federal government, for crying out loud. You know as well as I do, that wasn't going to happen. You southerners down there, you think you're going to walk out of here and take half the pot, huh? All right, now we're all in this thing together. And when this thing collapses, it's going to collapse on all of us all at the same time. And then the collapse is underway. It's occurring right in front of your eyeballs every day. But here's the deceptive part. It takes 3.5 years to reach bottom. That's what happened from 29 to 33, 3.5 years. Now, the stock market lost 89% of its value from 29 to 33. So far, it's lost about, it was 82 the other day. Let's just take 82 and divide that by 440 divided by 140. It's running at about 58%. So it's lost 42% of its value so far. And all of the gurus here believe that it's going to go down to around 3,800. They think that that's where the legitimate bottom to the stock market, that is the Dow Jones Industrial Average, that its real bottom is going to be around 3,800. Some of them think 38 to 44. So now if you've got stocks, I was talking to a guy here the other day, and he said his mother has stocks. All of her money is in stocks. And he said, "Mother, do you think maybe you might want to consider selling the stocks?" She looked at him like he'd suffered a stroke. He was mentally impaired. "What? What? Sell stocks? Why, we've been through this before." All right, I've mentioned this in programs in the past. Nobody makes money in stocks except the brokers and insiders. Us little guys down here don't make money in stocks. And if you bought $10,000 worth of stock in 1960 and you kept it to the year 2000 and you sold it, you lost $3,800 in purchasing power. And that was the bottom line. Yes, it's true your stock was worth $73,000. And you made seven times, but you seven times wouldn't cover inflation, and when you got all three, you lost $3,800 in purchasing power. Now, that's the stock market. Now, if you want to invest in stocks and 401ks and one thing and another, that's your choice in life. Don't let me get in your way, but it's bad economics. When you're putting in dollars that are worth 100 cents today and you're going to be taking out 30 cent dollars in 30 years, that's bad economics. Bad, bad. When you've got 100 cent dollars in 1930 and then you cash them in for 2 cents today, that's a loss. That's a 98% loss. That's bad, bad, bad. So tuck that one away in your heart. Just thought I'd share that one with you. Now, let me give you a name and number here again. Remember, this is the Privateer. I'm going to give them another plug here. The Privateer, William A.M. Buckler. Why don't you go to their website? It's www.the-privateer.com. All right, let's try the other one here. It's called the International Forecaster, theinternationalforecaster.com. It's just that simple, www.theinternationalforecaster.com. Now, we're up to 15. We'll take a look at this next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, looking at economic reality. Meanwhile, back on the farm, let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.